702.
702 for the curious.
On 92.7 and 106 FM.
Right, so I'm sure you may have been taken aback. Maybe not as much as I was yesterday, but Cyril Ramaphosa addressed the ANC Lekgotla press conference yesterday. And there was a very strong focus on delivering SOE executive appointments that were fit for purpose. President Ramaphosa delivering that frank assessment of the ANC's policy failings when it comes to public enterprises, saying that the ruling party has to acknowledge and move forward if it is going to meet South Africa's demands of service delivery. He said that the parties discussed how it should foster economic growth and deal with state-owned enterprises, and essentially the commercial and development mandates of SOEs need to be commercially, or rather clearly outlined and communicated with regular reviews, and most critically, that the institutional design and appointment processes at SOEs need to be reviewed in order to support the developmental mandates that each of them have. An astonishing 740 SOEs in South Africa. We only hear about the bad eggs, but I'm yet to find one that's completely free from the nonsense that you usually associate with a public enterprise. But perhaps the most critical point there for me was that the president said that there's going to be greater operational efficiency, and that the government would ensure people that are fit for purpose were placed at state entities in executive positions. So fit for purpose, essentially I read that as no more cronies. This is easier said than done. We spoke at length yesterday with Professor Mkabisi and Lechana about the political balance of forces, and I think this is a serious challenge that lays ahead for Cyril Ramaphosa. But let's talk about the private sector for a moment, because you're going to have the president trying to really turn the Titanic around on a 10-cent coin at SOEs, but you've got an environment where the private sector can also be accused of doing the exact same thing. And to talk about ethics, not only in the public sector, but in the private sector, Managing Director at Ethics, Monitoring and Management Services, Cynthia Schoeman, thank you very much for your time and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So I'm sure, and I'm not the only person that has heard the old adage, never mind heard, but lived, eaten, breathed, got the T-shirt. It's not what you know, it's who you know. From an ethical standpoint, where does that leave us as private citizens?
No,
go ahead, please.
No, I was going to say, I think you capture it very well. The who you know, we've got the political connections. But what you know really speaks to being suitably qualified, fit for purpose. But being, you know, focused on ethics as I am, I would add that what you know is not the end of the story. That being suitably qualified is, of course, important and should have been a given all this time. This shouldn't be some luxury that we're now starting to consider. But coming back to the who you know, what you know, I would tell you that the crucial element is that when you add ethics to that, What effect it has is that it determines how you apply what you know, and it determines how you achieve the organization's goal. And that how, you mentioned in your introduction, you know, a number of organizations that have been in the news for ethical scandals. And the challenge was not that these people were lacking in skills or competence or knowledge. The challenge was that the path they followed, how they went about things, was wrong. So I think you've got to do the who, what, and how. And I think you've got to bring those three together to get the sort of outcome that we would really desire.
Okay, so yeah, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, right? I mean, when you talk about ethics, people think maybe I just go look on the internetdictionary.com and I see what the definition is, and I try to live my life to a certain set of principles, moral standing that's maybe deeply connected to my upbringing, my background, and that type of thing. But ethics, especially in the workplace, in my mind, goes a little bit further than that, right? Because you're not only representing yourself in the workplace, but you are essentially representing the people you work for, the organization that you spend 8 hours or more a day at.
Exactly. And here's an interesting add to that. Again, coming back to, and I think there's a lot to be discussed around public versus private sector, that when you're working for a private sector entity, you know, whether that entity is 702 or whatever, of course you are representative of the brand. And if you in your personal capacity do something outrageous, it of course has the potential to impact the organization. But the challenge is that this applies in the public sector too. And the public sector entities are often far, far bigger and have far greater influence over the citizens and the population in this country than most private sector entities. So when someone who is, you know, a really huge political heavyweight is doing something outrageously unethical, the impact of that, the negative effect of that as a leadership role model is massive. It doesn't do away, it doesn't discount the fact that in all our capacities, if we behave unethically, it has an impact. But when you are nationally, a primary citizen, a major role model, a senior political figure, the impact is massive.
So how many times have you been passed up for that promotion because there's someone that knows the favorite whiskey brand of the boss? Or there's someone's child's friend's mother's cousin's best chummy of the HR director that's organized someone a plum position where you were hoping to land up one day? The lines are open, 011-883-0702. We're talking about ethics when it comes to the workplace, not only in the public, but also in the private sector. And I want to hear from you. How many of you out there have been passed up for that promotion for someone with better connections than you? Cynthia, I mean, it's quite a valiant thing that President Cyril Ramaphosa is trying to do. I don't necessarily see this happening overnight, right? Like I keep on saying, it's trying to turn the Titanic around on a 10-cent coin. But, I mean, do you think that in many ways we might just be piddling into the wind here because this is the private sector's doing as well? The way to get ahead is the way to work your connections, is the way to play the game. I mean, and it's not only South Africa where it works like this. Politics in the workplace, politics at work are everywhere.
I think a point I'd like to stress out of what you said that I think is important and you alluded to earlier is that as certainly in South Africa, we have, I think many people have fallen into the trap of being hugely critical of corruption in the public sector with good reason. But I think what we've got to balance that with is the recognition that literally for every corruptor, there's a corruptee. That this is a two-person game. That for every bribe that was accepted, someone paid it. And in general, not only in South Africa, internationally, in general, that falls into a private and public sector combination. For obvious reasons that you know, public sector is sitting with, you know, for example, large infrastructure projects that they can give out. And you know, suddenly an SAP is saying, oh, we'd really like that IT contract. And there's a little bit of dubious money changing hands, you know, and we can name a dozen different examples. So I think it's fair to say that we shouldn't fool ourselves that the fraud, the corruption that we're looking at here, very largely under the banner of state capture, but there was always a private sector company involved. I mean, you know, if you look at the Gupta companies, please let's be clear, they were private sector organizations. They were the other side of it. So I think that's a factor, but overriding that, where I make the distinction between public and private sector, and I think an important distinction, is that in the private sector, if you and I look at an organization and we feel like we've been ripped off by, I don't know, Assura, healthcare provider, whatever, we can change. We can say, I'm never dealing with them again and I'm going to deal with someone else. And we could apply that example in many ways in the private sector. The catch is, and this brings with us, let me say at the outset, a huge added ethical responsibility, is that within the public sector, we don't have another choice of where we get our driver's license or where we get our passport renewed or to whom we pay our taxes. We don't have a choice. And there, I almost want to label it a monopoly. Can you see that if that is the only place where you can get your driver's license, and the only way you can do it is fraudulently, then we've got a very challenging situation. So I do distinguish that as citizens, part of the population in this country, in the private sector, we often have a choice to take our business, to take our choices elsewhere. But that doesn't exist in the public sector. And for that reason, that's one of the reasons, they really carry an extraordinary greater responsibility to behave appropriately.
If you just joined us, Cynthia Schoeman, Managing Director at Ethics Monitoring Management Services, joining us for a discussion about ethics. Still don't think we've got to the nub of the matter yet. We've got a couple of more minutes left with Cynthia. We've got Tony in El Dorado Park. And if you have an ethics question, give us a call right now, 011-883-0702. Tony, what's on your mind?
Hello, Nicholas. What I have on my mind regarding this question of ethics is, you had carried in your news bulletin for the whole of the day the news that all the members of the Minerals and Petroleum Board of the mining, involved with the mining, that they all resigned, and then Montasha replaced them with a new board. So one just wonders, the Act, these members are established in terms of the Act 57 of Act 28 of 2002, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. And it's composed by between 7 and 20 members. And for all of them to resign and all of them to be replaced by the minister, boggles the mind. I know Ramaphosa indicated that, the appropriate people and ethical people should be appointed in posts where the government is involved in the public sector. But is there something to read within this that maybe there were questions of ethics involved, unethical behavior by all the members?
Yeah, look, Tony, we're having a little bit of a merry-go-round at the moment in terms of boards resigning, people leaving, board members throwing in the towel, especially when it comes to state-owned enterprises. Let's just be quite frank. Cynthia, it's not necessarily very often, at least if you believe the stories that come out as to the actual reasons why people throw in the towel at a board level at public enterprises, it's not for ethical purposes. It's not as though they serve on a board, don't like what they're seeing, and just resign out of protest. There's normally a couple of more twists to that tale.
I think that the other facet of that is, did they resign or were they asked to leave? And I think a point that is worth emphasizing is that if we're looking at corporate governance, which of course is core to any board, I think the dual requirement in terms of corporate governance of ethical and effective leadership is something we really need to bear in mind. That it's not, again, we're back to the what and the how, that it's not that in our SOEs, regrettably, we've seen both a lack of effectiveness and a lack of ethics. And so when you're looking at a whole board, leaving, I must tell you, for me, it's raising red flags. It's not raising, white ones are the ones, it's raising red flags. And I think it brings back to, was there ethics in place? Was there effectiveness in place? And, we've seen a plethora of examples where effectiveness was not vaguely in place.
All right, we got Raphael in Pretoria. If you don't want to give us a call, WhatsApp voice notes to 0727021702. Raphael in Pretoria.
Hi, Nicholas. Hello to the guests and the listeners. I'd just like to make a very short comment. Ethical behavior is important, but it's a cornerstone to a bigger structure. And I believe that structure should include accountability, truthfulness, integrity, and, of course, ethical behavior. And once you've got that structure in place, you can build anything on top of that. The whole point is that how do we measure all of this?
Good point. Good point. Thank you very much for that, Raphael. I suppose, Cindy, you hit the nail on the head there, because everybody's got ethics. Some people just have really, really dodgy ethics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a spectrum, you know, from fabulous to appalling. but I think a point worth emphasizing out of the caller's comments here is, how do you measure it? And let's be clear that the Companies Act, in terms of Social and Ethics Committee, and King IV both advocate very clearly that ethics is something that, especially in King IV, should be assessed, should be monitored over time. And let me tell you, as an ethics practitioner, this is one of the most effective things an organization can do, public or private, is actually assess the ethics, of course properly, but actually assess the ethics so that you're saying, if you're going to improve it, where are the really catastrophic areas, but they're probably strengths as well. Where are the strengths? And looking at, in any organizational situation, looking at actual current reality, that you're saying, hey guys, listen, these are the three biggest risks, let's work on that then, and so that you're moving forward on a genuine current reality. That comment around assessment is a very sound comment, and something that I think many organizations should be doing much more than they are.
So let's, before we say goodbye, try and unpack the president's new directive here when it comes to SOEs. What is the ethics behind it all, right? Because is it merely good enough saying that you're going to get the best fit for purpose person for the job? What are you trying to do to ensure that they discharge their duties in an ethical manner?
I think your comment, your question is well placed. And in that regard, I certainly do give the president credit, because while focusing on being suitably qualified, he also specifically mentioned that what was important was not simply the lack of political interference and political connections, but he specifically identified the issue of integrity and operational efficiency. And for me, that covers the ethical and effective element that I just spoke of a moment ago. And when you bring that suitable qualified, that fit for purpose, plus integrity, plus operational efficiency, actually, if you really get those three, I think you've got a fabulous recipe for success. Then it's not speculative. Then I'd say this genuinely, this will work. But the crucial point that I think should be stressed is that the most impactful people in terms of ethics is the leadership of any organization, and indeed of the country. And where that is lacking, the ripple effect of that is unfortunately very damaging.
So, Cynthia Skuman, as a parting shot, now, it seems a pity to leave this to the last question that I ask you. But in the South African context, it's really not as simple as that, though. Getting the right person for the job that's fit for purpose, that tackles their duties with the utmost integrity and ethics. I want to say it's not just black and white in terms of it being complicated, but it kind of is just black and white. Based on our past, we've got things like BEE, affirmative action, and it's in many instances been abused. And it's left this horrible taste in many people's mouths that has allowed it to become a little bit of a racial scapegoat in terms of, this is not working. BEE and affirmative action is just a path to cronyism and getting people that are fat and lazy behind desks of jobs that they have absolutely no idea what the hell they're doing.
And I'm not going to quote an example, but I'm entirely sure that BEE can, in some instances, be equated with that. But I think it's not a useful path to tie the two together too strongly. The challenge of cronyism, the challenges of nepotism, are not necessarily linked in any way to BE. They can be linked to other opportunities, employment opportunities or the like. And I think that coming back to the merit-based approach of being suitably qualified, of being fit for purpose, for me, that is an extraordinarily sound starting point of saying whatever the deal, whatever the negotiation, whatever the service being provided, is this genuinely based on merit? And in a country such as ours, will it achieve the intended outcome, be that service delivery, be that economic growth, be that job creation? And for me, those are the ethical responsibilities. Those are the questions that leaders need to be applying themselves to. I think, as I say, we can, you know, take up our time and energy in criticizing, you know, initiatives, but really when we genuinely apply ethics, when we genuinely look at who is best for the job, and there are qualifications that can be added to that, and we add these other factors of really achieving the outcomes that, for example, SOEs should be achieving, yes, it's going to be a hell of a tough path. Can it be done with really good leadership that is really supported, that is not undermined politically? It can be done.
Cynthia Skuman, what are the basic online tools that we can use to live a more ethically charmed life?
Online tools? My organization only has tools for organizations, not individuals. But, you know, I think that when we're looking at ethics, I think we all need to be a lot more honest with ourselves around the areas where we're not actually living up to it. What do we let slide? You know, do we condone someone buying counterfeit goods? Actually, we shouldn't. Do we laugh when someone has paid a bribe to a traffic officer? It's not funny. It's perpetuating a really wicked system. And so I think at an individual level, I think we could all, perhaps beginning of the year, pause and just reflect and say, are we acting out? Are we behaving in a way that reflects the society we would want? And so, as I say, at an individual level, I don't think we're going to have a tidal wave tomorrow of improved behavior. But I do think that at an individual level, we do need at times to pause and not get caught up in everyone else's doing it. I got that. It is neither an excuse nor a reason. We should be making those choices on a far sounder basis.
Cynthia Skuman, thank you very much for your time. Managing Director at Ethics Monitoring and Management Services, talking about ethics on 702. Coming up next, the same-sex marriage debacle down in the Western Cape. Say a gay couple want to have their wedding ceremony at a very well-known venue.